your dear friends in this weekly study of the Bhagavad Gita, we have been trying to see how one can approach the goal or destination of life, and the path has different aspects. There is the aspect of turning our activities, orienting our actions in this direction. And then there is now what is being discussed is the path of devotion, which is very efficacious because it turns our emotions to God. All our aspects of personality, different aspects of personality, need to be turned to this ideal. And the devotional aspect is specifically important because of our life being governed more by emotions and less by intellectual understanding. So therefore, Lord here is telling that, look, turn your attention to the reality of this universe. And we saw one question that comes to our mind very often, and many actually ask this question, that maybe I will get God, but then I may lose some other nice things of the world. I don't want to lose any of it. I want to get everything. So Lord is assuring that everything is really contained in Him. There is nothing outside Him. He is this reality of the universe. And therefore, if you get God, you get everything. If you don't get God, you don't get anything. So it is, you have to give up that idea that there is something apart from God. There is nothing that is apart from God, like we saw in this the 7th and 8th verse of the 9th chapter, that all is contained in the God. All this creation appears on the Lord as the waves appear in the ocean. These waves come and go. They are not they are just names and forms. Wave rises, wave stays, wave goes. Similarly, all these appearances, big and small, they come, they rise on the Lord, the ocean stays there, and dissolve or go back to the ocean. They do not really affect the existence of the ocean. So, some are big waves. Like the, in this universe, we have many huge galaxies. And then there are tiny atoms, there are tiny small waves, big waves and small waves. But big also are, after all, waves, changing phenomena. And then small also are the same. Both behind both the big as well as small is the infinite ocean. The infinite is neither big nor small. It is immeasurable. It is it includes the so-called big as well as, in exactly the same way, the so-called small. So this keeps on happening all the time. And Lord says that it is my power that makes it happen, that there is no other agency involved in this. It is the power of the Lord that again and again makes this happen. Don't try to find how and why about it. The reason is that how and why work in the domain of multiplicity. in one existence there is no scope for logic. There is no second thing there. And therefore, you cannot reasonably ask this question that why does God do this? There is no why there, no how there either. So therefore, it is the nature of God. There is no need to further how it happens. We should understand the domain, where the reason becomes applicable. It is, the reason is a tool and we should apply it where it is applicable. Like the screwdriver is a tool, but then you cannot apply it everywhere. Where there is the screw is there, you can use the screwdriver to put in a screw or take it out. But if at some place different tools are required, screwdriver is not applicable there. If you want to cook something, the screwdriver is not the tool to be used there, and you have to use tools or something like that. So, we need to know where reason is to be used. So Lord says that this is how you see the phenomena of universe. Things come up, things stay, they dissolve. This is all changing. What is unchanging in that? And the Lord alone remains unchanging. And let us feel that Lord as our reality also. Ocean, just take that example. Ocean, reality of every wave. So that is the reality of this wave also, this wave also. Every wave is pervaded in and through with this divine. We are not out of it. That is our reality also. In fact, it is easier to feel that as our reality. God is in me. So that means my true nature is also the same divine. I am divine actually. It is only thing is I should not hold on to my identity as a particular name and form, a particular shape. If I give up that identity, if I transcend that identity, I am God. Otherwise, I am limited something, and what limited? That is keeps continuously changing. The wave, the shape and the size of the wave is changing every moment. There is no steadiness about it. There is no identity to a wave. The identity belongs only to the ocean. So, let us see this truth. And he said there in the ninth verse that, so Lord, the question comes that you do all this work of creation, preservation and destruction. So you must be very busy all the time, engaged. And those actions must be binding to you too. Lord says, no, a very important principle to learn from here, that our actions, they bind us. Bind in the sense that we have to take the consequences of our actions. The action is there automatically. The cause and effect, that result also will be there. And if I am doing it, I take the result also. If I am eating, for example, hot chili, it is not that the John's mouth is going to burn. It is my mouth that will burn, the mouth that ate the chili. It is the results follow the action. Every action will have its repercussion, and that consequence of the action is to be taken. So, Lord is, we ask Lord that, well, you are creating this whole thing. What is the consequence of that? And so you are responsible for everything. An easy way out, that, and it is at that time we remember God very quickly. When things don't go our way, when they are going smoothly our way, the God is pushed in the background, who cares. But when things don't go properly, oh God, why did you do like this? You see, you are responsible. We put that responsibility on God. You are the culprit. So, God says, no, I am not. Nachamam tani karmani nibadhanti dhananjaya udasina vadasinam asattam teshu karmasu. These acts of creation, etc., do not bind me, O Arjuna, who remain unattached to them like one indifferent. Lord explains that why they do not affect me, why do they not bind me? And that also gives us a clue, how will they not bind us also? Shankaracharya in his commentary brings out this beautiful idea in this verse, that my actions do not bind me. Why? Because I do not have the idea of doership. I do not have the idea that I am doing it. It is a spontaneous manifestation. No doership there. And I am not interested in the results of it either. I have no attachment to either the results or that doership. If there is doership, you get the result. If no doership, you don't get the result. So, now Lord is free. Now the same law becomes applicable to every one of us. It becomes applicable to Vishwanath. It becomes applicable to Anne. It becomes applicable to Mili, to everyone. If we perform our actions in this spirit, then they will not bind us. Am I right, Gita? That if the Lord is not bound by that action, why? Because he has no that illusion of doership and has no attachment for the results of that. And thus, the actions do not bind Lord. Now, if I do my actions also with this spirit, with this attitude, then they will not bind me. Why do we get bound? There again in the commentary, Shankara gives a very beautiful analogy that our actions bind ourselves because of this idea of dualship. They weave a web around us. We become, through actions, the owners, that this belongs to me, this house belongs to me, this property belongs to me, this body belongs to me, these kids belong to me, and it goes on expanding. And these not only kids, these grandkids belong to me. What happens? You go on. Shankara says, like a silkworm goes on weaving a cocoon around it. What a beautiful analogy. Nobody weaves it. No God weaves it. Where does that silkworm already? It itself goes on weaving it around itself and then gets caught. Who bound that silkworm? Its own actions. That creates the bondage. And we feel, I am the doer. I made these kids, so they belong to me. Not that we are very particular in discharging all the duties towards them, but the sense of doership is very prominent. The sense of proprietorship, they belong to me. And that becomes a cocoon around us. Then it goes on expanding. Everything that is the joy and the sorrows associated with that, that also belongs to me. If the children fail in the test, it is not. Children become unhappy, but the parents become still more unhappy. It is, and if the children do good in the exams, the parents become more joyous than the kids. Why so? Because that is mine, you know, everything is mine. And so we get bound by that. And if we therefore just discharge our duties without getting bound by them, without getting attached to any of them, without calling anything as mine, then, well, you also will have the same law. The same law that applies to God applies to us also. Then we will not get bound by the actions. Then you can do all the actions without incurring any bondage. But it is easier said than done. They have the habits, the attachments, and all that is created doesn't go away very quickly. It has to, that knowledge has to dawn and become functional in life. And knowledge is many times just static in life. Yes, yes, God has created everything. And then why you are seeking credit for things? If God has done everything, so much headache. People spoil whole their peace of mind by that feeling that I am doing all this work and that fellow is grabbing all the credit. It is so many people come and complain to me about this, that Swami, I am feeling so very perturbed. See, I am working day and night for this. And that fellow, he is after grabbing all those things and not letting me get the credit. You are Swami, you live in this protected environment, you don't know about how the world is so full of all evil people. Well, if we are not evil ourselves, why should we go and live in the evil world? We ourselves have a lot of evil, but we point the finger to others, forgetting the three fingers are pointing to ourselves. One finger only is pointed to somebody else. At that time, three fingers are pointing to myself. So it is not that the world alone is evil. We feel that I am doing all this work, and so I must get the credit. I deserve it. Okay, you get bound by it. It is you get that much credit. Nobody can take it away from you. What you deserve must come to you. What you never deserve doesn't come to you. You may be smarting under the illusions that no, I actually deserve that. No, if you deserve, then you get it. If you don't deserve, then you may have lot of illusions about your abilities and what you did and what... it is not like that. But whether you deserve it, whether you don't deserve it, the moment you claim it to be mine, it becomes your bondage. It is, we are like those put under the bondage. The cudgels are in the wrist. Now gradually those people under those chains, they start thinking those chains are my ornaments. Now how to get rid of those? Those chains, they bind you. But when you think that, oh, what a valuable chains they are, and if they are gone, well, it will be a big loss. That is what our attachments do to us. It is, it doesn't bring any love, friends. It is, the sooner we give up this idea that attachment has to do anything and with love, It is, we have to become free of this idea. You can love much better if there is less attachment. The attachment does not bring love, it kills love actually. Attachment demands, love gives. So let us not have this idea that if we give up attachment, what will happen to all the love? No, the love will increase. So therefore it is, the Lord says, those actions do not bind me because of this reason. And if this reason, therefore, if we imbibe that, it becomes ours too. See the scientific nature of the advice given. Like same thing Buddha did when he was being praised. He told the one who was praising him, "Oh, don't waste time in that. What is there in praising me? I did something and so I came to this state. You do it, you will also get there." It is not that Buddha is not a name. Buddha is a state. That means the enlightened one. So you get the illumination, you become enlightened. It is not anybody's special privilege. Each of us have the right to that. So he says here, again it has a very beautiful, that how that idea, that how we see this world all around us and who makes it go, who makes it function. There is an order we see in the world. Had it been unreal, there wouldn't be any order in it. Things happen in a very orderly fashion. After a certain time, the temperatures start rising. A few days ago, just a few days ago, we were complaining about the terrible cold. Oh, never before that we had this winter. I hear this every year, that the winter is so bad this year. It is bad when it becomes intense. After a few days, what a terrible summer, the temperatures. As you were talking about global cooling some time back, now you start talking about global warming. But it is in such an orderly fashion that as the month of April starts coming up, you will start feeling the warmth. It is as it becomes October, November, you start feeling cold. There is an order to it. If the world is all illusory, like the waves on the ocean, how is there this order? That order is also the part of the illusion. That order is not again something that is... what is the meaning of order? You observe things happening and form certain connections, and that you call it order. But the order is not really outside this illusion. It is part of it. Now that is explained in the next verse, 10th verse. Maya adhyakshena prakriti stuyate sacharacharam hetunanena kaunteya jagat viparivartate. Decided over by me, prakriti brings forth the world of moving and unmoving things. For this reason, O son of Kunti, said Arjuna, the world revolves. It's ongoing. Who makes it? It is by under the presiding authority of a Lord that it goes on. And what is that Lord? It is same like our world. Who makes it? You make it. The Lord, in the sense that you make it, you make your world. Who makes your world when you are dreaming? Nobody else has made it. You only. In the dream you may become a cat and run around after a dream mouse. You become a dream cat running after a dream mouse in a dream forest. Who made it? The dream forest is also you made it. the dream cat as well as the dream mouse, everything is you alone. And then there is a dream order in the dream world. Indeed, after you wake up, you don't see that orderliness in the dream world. But in the dream, it was all consistent, wonderfully connected, all logical, all clear. And yet, who made it? Well, your mind created that. And that is not the cat that you had become. That has not created it. But the you who were sleeping, that has created all this. So in this waking state also, who creates it? Nobody else. You create it. Nobody else has created it. You again doesn't mean the form. Like the cat doesn't create the dream world. You became the cat in the dream. You are thinking that you are a cat. But that cat is not creating the dream world. If the cat sleeps there in the dream and then starts seeing a dream there where it may become a mouse and being pursued by another cat, who knows. But then that dream is, you can say, that dream world is created by this cat. The dream universe is created by you who are lying on the bed. And so now this universe, who has made it? It is a dream world. Dream world not in the sense that the world that we will look for, like a dream girl that a boy will be looking for, not in this sense a dream world. It is the world that is just illusory, not real. Who made it? You yourself made it. No one else is responsible for that. Ketuna, anena. Because of this, it not being real, viparivartate, it comes and goes. Things coming and going is the sign that they were not real. The reality, whatever is real, will remain. Whatever is only an appearance will come and go away. That which is an appearance comes and goes away. That which is real stays as real. So this world, because it is continuously changing, one can see, why is it changing? Because it is not real. There is no other cause for that. This you alone make it. You are the Lord that make it. When you are watching, the world is there. When you are not watching, it is not there. You do not see a world of which you are not a part. Where you are not a subject, that world you never perceive. In our perceptions, in our world, I am the subject that is seeing it. And even in the dream, you may become a cat, but that cat has to be there to see the cat world there. It is, without that, the dream of experience also is not possible. It is, you have to be there as subject. If you are asleep, the whole world also is gone. It is, therefore, that no other purpose is there. It comes, stays as you are. As is your state, so is the state of your world also. So, and then now he says that look at me. Lord says, look at me. It is, we were discussing this, that the incarnation of God is the goal as well as the way. So it is important to look at that, how that human form of the divine lived the life, so that we understand the truth by looking at it. It is a demonstration. Like when a training is to be given, an expert person gives a demonstration that like how to play tennis. So somebody shows how you have to hold the racket, When you want to do this service hit, how you should be throwing the ball up, how your angle should be, and all that. And so looking at that, you know, when how that person is doing, and then you try to imitate, and thus you also gradually become like that. So the God in the human form, look at the actions of God, look at how the knowledge of that God is, and thus try to, you know, inculcate that in our lives. That is what we need to do, inculcating that observation and trying to imitate that, so that it will come slowly in our lives too. So he again warns that how should you look upon me, not just as a human being, but the divine in the form of a human being. That divinity hasn't changed there at all. The divine in the form of human being. Like we have a nice sculpture there made by our Dorothy. So a beautiful sculpture made of sugar. There is a big fish there. Now the fish, it is the form of shape, but if you taste it, it is sugar. Everything is made of sugar. So it is the sugar shaped as fish, sugar shaped as flower, sugar shaped as water. Everything is sugar there. So similarly, this human appearance, it is God shaped as human being, divinity expressed in human form. And this is the purpose of it, to teach us, so that we will learn. So Lord says that if you do not get to the divine aspect, then you will not learn. You have to learn the divine aspect by seeing the divine play in and through the human form, so that you will be able to connect with yourself. The human form is necessary for so that we can connect it to ourselves. That it is, yes, yes, that fellow is also human being like me, and so I will also be able to do that. Avajananti maam mudha manushim dhanumashritam param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. The ignorant deride me who have taken a human form, not knowing my higher nature as the great Lord of the beings. That param bhava means my true nature, the highest nature, that I am divine, that is not paid attention to. They think that I am just man. Look at him, and why that should become our ideal. Maybe he is a great man, but that doesn't mean divine. Maybe he has done some marvelous acts in his life, but he is after all man. Why should we take a look at that? And Lord says, no, no, you have to see the human aspect, human form, and coming as divine, the divine manifesting through this human form. To look at, if you do not look at it in that form, then you will deride Lord. It is, you will insult God's true nature because it is appearing in human form. That is how two types of mistakes take place. One is this, that when you see the human form, you take it as human. Do not look upon, then try to look at the divinity manifesting through this. That is one mistake. Another form, we look upon divine and forget the human aspect of it, and then put it only in the shrine
Oh, he is Lord. We salute Lord. We kneel down before Lord. And then, but think that that is after, not for us. That is for God alone can do that, not we. So we lose the importance or the teaching benefit of both these. That Lord is doing it because so that we can learn from that. So both these aspects are to be kept in mind, that he is Lord and he is appearing in human form. So that we will learn that our true nature too is divine. That is discovering the kingdom within, the kingdom of heaven within. So Lord says that if you don't do, then you will miss this great thought. And by this, what happens? A terrible problem in life, a life caught in all unrealistic hopes, go on, running after, chasing the impossible. That becomes the life then, and just frustrating. In the beginning, in the youth, one may feel, no, after a few days I am sure to get it. But as the age advances, fortunately for many people, that thing starts dawning up, that these are not the proper goals in life. But by that time, lot of energy has been spent in doing wrong things, and the body, the mind has been given that training, that habit. So it is rather difficult. Not that it is certainly better than many who, even after spending many years, do not realize that it is futile to run after those non-existent things. So, moghasha moghakarmano moghajnana vichetasah rakshasim asurim chaiva prakritim mohinim shritah. Of vain hopes, of vain efforts, of vain knowledge, thoughtless and taking to the deceptive dominance and fiendish nature, they deride me. They deride Lord means moghasha, that they run after the impossible. Keep the hopes keep on coming in their lives, that maybe today I didn't get the pleasure that I was looking after, but if I get a promotion in my job, or if I get that lottery, then everything will be so smooth. I'm sure to get that pleasure. Okay, that comes. You may get maybe a lottery ticket, and then you may win a lottery. But does that what you were seeking is obtained through that? You get money, but not the happiness that you were looking for. The life, in fact, becomes more complicated. Many times when people run for money and feel that if they get that money, and their life will be so happy, so fulfilled. But they cannot really decide a fixed sum of money that will make it. It is very difficult. Is the person who is, say, getting only about 30,000 a year, thinks that if I get 40, that will be just enough for everything. And then I will not have to keep on worrying about it. Well, the person who is getting just 500,000 also feels that if I get 600,000, that will be so good. It is, in fact, if you see, the desire for more money is more among the rich people. Not that much among the poor people. Poor people will be stealing a few pennies here and there. Those who are already millionaires, they will go to steal more millions. Because basically this desire for money is never satiable. And yet we harbor that desire. So it is called useless desire. It is never fulfilled. We harbor desires which can never be satisfied. That let me, for example, get pleasure from something, getting, say, a particular house. Well, you will get the house, not the satisfaction. You may think that if I get to marry a particular boy or girl, that heaven will be just with me. And all those fairy tales and all, they end there, you know, that they lived happily ever after. But they don't probe after that because they know it is not worth probing. It is, so they end up there. Because, well, the foolish dreams are being chased all through, never to be fulfilled. Why? Because we are impractical in life. The practicality will tell us to have a goal which is real goal and not an imaginary goal. Real goal has to be a real object first of all and not something that is an illusory fleeting thing. An illusory fleeting thing, if that is an object, then you may see it right at hand, like the water in a mirage. Go on chasing it. The faster you run, the faster the water also runs away from you. You never get that. So, God is the reality. If we miss that point, then the life is full of, you know, moha asha. Then, because of the false hopes, then our actions also become false actions, wrong actions, mistaken actions, running after those false hopes. And what do they bring? Then our wrong understandings get further complicated, become further, those mistakes become because of the actions performed. Those things become further rooted or further strengthened, and the mind becomes all so confused. What is real? Where am I going? What should I do next? Who is mine and who is not mine? Things become so difficult. It is the other day, a man had come here very depressed, and he had been at in the army. He had gone for war, and after 4 years in Afghanistan, came back. And then, in the meantime, here his girlfriend had ditched him and gone with somebody else. And then he had some kids also from her, so it is now the problem, you know, that who is mine, who is not mine, and what should I now be doing? And so it is also become such a big confusion. God, who is really ours, sitting in our heart, when thinking of God, we show far away and heaven there, I don't know where. See our actions. The God who is nearest, how do we show? Somewhere in the heaven, or far away. And others who are really nobody to us, temporary connections, we say that they are mine. And it is all just mistaken and confused understanding. And thus what we indulge in, that is what all devilish, fiendish actions. When we have all the false hopes and we are not able to realize them, when we are not able to get them, then we become cruel. we become immoral, we commit all the criminal actions. That is how the origin of crime is, that it is we try to get something that we want, if possible, legitimately, but if it eludes, then the hope for it, I must get it. And then, if that is the desire that starts dictating, then all the moral holds are just kicked out. That nothing is, you read all those stories, somebody killed the very dear mother. Why? Well, you had something in mind and the mother didn't help to get it. And the anger just wailed and the fellow just killed the mother. What would you say? It is very easy to say that fellow was so wretched, bad. But if we looked into us, then if we keep such hopes, unending hopes, then we may not be too shy to commit such things. When the intensity goes like that, grows to that extent, then as that very famous verse in Ramayana says, that kama turanam na bhayam na lajja. If a person has the intense desire for something, then the person loses all sense of shame as well as fear. When the desire is in check, then you don't do it because you know the society will criticize you, will spit upon your face. So you are not doing it. The desire to have a good name in society somehow curbs that desire. But if it becomes so strong that you don't care for what society is saying, that then one may go headlong into that. And so all shame is just kicked out. All sense of fear also is kicked out because of the intensity of desire. So you become a veritable demon running after these false hopes. So he says, that is how the life in ignorance. It is ignorance that causes us commit heinous acts. That is how, at the crucifix, therefore Jesus said, Father, forgive them who did this. Why? They know not what they are doing. Ignorance, Ignorance made them do it. All heinous crimes, and the basis is this ignorance. Through ignorance, one does them. So, if we see the Lord, who is the reality, who is something real to hope for in life, then the life will change. It will be a life full of joy. That is the real life, friends. It is, we want happiness, and so, to get happiness, one has to connect to the source of happiness. That is what the people with sane frame of mind, they will do. You want to say buy grocery, you don't go to barber shop. You have to go to the source where the grocery is available. So, when you go to get happiness, you have to go to the source of happiness where happiness is available. You go to money to get happiness. Ask money, does it have happiness that I will get from it? Then we will know that it is not there, we can't get it from there. It is very important, we should try to get from something what that thing has. Money has many things. So let us try to get that from money. But happiness, the money doesn't bring happiness. Don't try to get it from money. Otherwise, we will go to the grocery store to get a haircut and go to the barber shop to buy veggies. It is, we will not get, we will be kicked out from both places. So, money can give something, get it from money. Many things will be available with many other, you know. But where is the source of happiness? God within. That is the source of happiness. And if we approach that, that will get, we will get that from Lord. So in the next verse, he will be telling how the wise people act. Those who understand, wise people and people who become saints. Mahatma nastu mam partha. Mahatma, that is called Mahatma. Mahatma means a great person who sees the truth and walks in that path. So we shall try to discuss that. Today's time is almost finished. So we shall try to discuss that in our next class. Any questions? So we shall conclude with the closing prayer since there are no questions today. There is on April 30th, we shall be having a retreat on Strength is Life, a famous saying of Swami Vivekananda. Saturday, April 30, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. with the discourses, meditation, group discussion and all. But you need to register for that. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarayi Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukha Padmadvina Srita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantra Tasya Namani Yani Karmapyekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.